the size of the legislation in order to try to assist on that side of the MDDA. Is it possible maybe to engage on that side of the National Treasury? Because sometimes you find that in MDDA, as it is presented, it raises key critical frustrations, but they are not just sitting because they are trying to move around to make door to door in order that how they can maybe best try to have the funds in order that they can assist the MDDA to be sustainable. Let me also acknowledge also on the side of the CASA, on the side of the regulation, because you can see that they are focused, but now they have already also identified the challenges on the side of the MDDA when coming to the side of the renewables. I would like just to understand, what is another method maybe that they can assist on that side of MDDA in order that those radio stations must not wait until their time frame of their contract being expired? How can we best being assisted on the issue of trying to motivate them while that 6 months period is in there in order that they must renew their contract timely? And also, I would like to appreciate when you've raised this as the issue of say, it can be much more better if the side of politics can try to be managed not to affect these stations on the side of the good government. Because indeed, we need to leave as politicians these community radio stations to the people who are relevant actually, in order that they can boost and assist for the benefit of the community in those areas. So indeed, we need to see how best can also assist on that side, not seeing politicians are the ones who like to lead in those stations, because indeed, the biasness will be affected to those stations if it can be in that manner. But there is this one that I would like to understand. As we are trying to encourage one district, one community radio station, what about this district that are bad? That you say that if it fails in only one community radio station, maybe it won't manage to cover the whole district as it is. But also, I would like to talk on the side of the MDDA. As you can see, it's a challenge. You are owing more money on the side of the Centec. To say, what do you think on the, on your side of your strategy, where we can have maybe some changes in order that to accommodate the side of Centec, because also the Centec is very key on the side of delivery the services of the distribution of that signal. So if we hamper them, not paying them, it will mean that the Centec will suffer on the other side. So I would just want just to check with a CEO of MDDA, what plans are you thinking that maybe can be implemented in order that to make the MDDA to be as easier for these debts that you are owing on the side of the Centec? Thank you, Chair. Let me pause there. Maybe I will come for the second round.
Thank you, Honorable Kubeka. I would now give an opportunity to the departments in terms of response. As agreed in the absence of the DG in GCIS, I will proceed. But I'll just give the Deputy Minister would have wanted to come in first or would come last. The Deputy Minister of Communication?
Chair, no. I'll come last.
No, thank you, Deputy Minister. We'll then now allow a response. I know that we have acting DG of communications, which is the PCDT, on an issue that would relate to the work in the department. If I can start there, and then from there would allow GCIS, followed by MDDA, followed by Centec, and then ICASA in responding.
Thank you very much, Chair, honorable members. And Chair, there's questions that have been asked, especially around fake news. I just, honorable Van Dam and honorable Mackenzie, I just wanted to give the background on the issue of fake news. This started around the 27th of March this year when it came to the directions, wherein a table was set up to deal with the issue of fake news. And then there was a string that was set up. Then that work was done. We set up a multi-sectoral team that comprised of civil society, such as your MMA, CSIR, Film and Publication Board. We had GCIS as well. Other folk also, we had your Facebooks and your Twitters, everyone was all on board. Now the work now is almost complete. Now I think, what lessons have we learned from that? How do we take the work forward in order to implement the fake news moving forward and preparing for the election? Now the meeting has been, the team has been set up, comprising of the very same people. Moving forward, GCIS, the CSI, have all the teams that I've mentioned, including civil society. They've only had one meeting so far, and they want to develop terms of reference. It will be still a multi-sectoral team that will actually be proactive. We have learned a lot from, especially in COVID, you would have noted, even just from broadcasting, even from social media, even on simple things such as your WhatsApp communication. Yes, it's not a foolproof. We are still just developing as we go ahead. So it is led by a young lady from our side. So there is that work that is going on. So I wanted to assure you, Honorable Van Dam, that it's something that we have taken seriously as government, and we are making sure that the people that have expertise in the sector, the civil society, are on board to also make sure that they are watching us, that we are not doing a divide and rule. So I wanted to assure you in that respect. So I wanted to respond to that. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now go, as I said, according with the presentation of the seat. We'll start with GCIS, then followed by Centec, and then CASA.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, just very briefly on behalf of our team, DGS stepped out, and please, Chair, if I may, honorable Manini, just to really also greet all my colleagues from the group here, and as you saw in the presentation, we are, as honorable Van Dam mentioned, really starting to leverage that collective partnership, and it really has borne a lot of fruit in the last year. So greetings to those colleagues as well, honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, honorable members, first of all, thank you very much to one and all honorable members, from honorable Fatima Wright to the honorable members, to the words of advice and insights and guidance. We take them all. Honorable Fatima, I assure you that I will definitely work with our team to make sure we double the efforts around the hotspots on the GBV area. And make sure that that kind of model that we did in both the Boca but also some of the broadcasting platforms we need to replicate. We can always provide more detail on that because we do have quite an extensive report on the best detailed campaign. Secondly, as the Honourable Leader, my colleague, the Acting Director General, has said for physical communication, we have a great partnership. I'm sure Honourable Members, I hope you have an opportunity to see the fake news stamp, which we developed as part of the process that Ms. Bakhti refers to. It became quite a celebrity in itself, the fake news stamp, and became very widely used. And as Honourable Van Damme said, the COVID lessons have really helped us to understand this. And it is definitely used both in the fake news process that you spoke about, but also in how we are developing further a campaigning basis that a number of the Honourable Members spoke to. So yes, the collaborative venture and the lessons from COVID are really, really helping guide us in the way we move forward, and we can certainly provide the report that Honourable Van Damme was asking for in another way. And then, Honourable Kubeka, you know, it's my colleague Karen Steele is going to top up a bit, but we really do believe, as our last slide was information, that the onset, and also to Honourable Molana's point about sustainability, we are firmly of the view that the onset of the district development model is going to give a lot of impetus. Because remember, the DDM and the one plan of a district is driven by a collective. It's this culture that everything is in the hands of our elected public representatives, everything is in the hands of government. It's what the district development is breaking down, firstly the silos in government, but also creating those social compacts. Now, we really believe that through good communication work, we can make sure that that social compact at the one plan level for a district understands just how important community media is to the overall transformation of a local space. So Honourable Members, we are really adopting that angle going forward. And obviously, while we continue to advocate around the Cabinet-approved communication policy, which has a lot to say about digital media, we are really, really making sure that as we do the communication planning around the one plan, we're actually advocating a lot to the social partners through the district communication forum around the issue of community media. I'm going to ask my colleague, Honourable Chair, Mr. Manelli, the matter of the other colleagues coming to the party. So my colleague Mr. Tyrone Field will elaborate a little bit further on the question raised by Honourable Kubeka. But from our side, Honourable Members, thank you so much on behalf of the team for this guidance and the good direction and keep us on the right track, as Honourable Molana and Honourable McKenzie said. Thank you very much. Tyrone?
Thank you, Michael. Morning, Chairperson. Good morning to the Deputy Minister and to all my colleagues on the witness stand. Honourable Members. I think on the issue of advertising, we depart from a position that that we would like all departments to participate in centralized media buying, which comes with the support of communications research that enables us to reach the right people in the right places through the right medium, including through the right language. It also allows us to achieve economies of scale and through the negotiations that are standard in the industry, it allows us to leverage some discounting. My colleague Michael has made the point about how through the district development model we will be effecting more efficient communications at that level, and we want to take media buying into that space. Even in a context where we recognize that that this is, for now, a largely voluntary exercise. We don't have anything statutory on this, and so our advocacy and our marketing of centralized media buying really depends on the evidence we can provide to departments of the efficacy of centralized media buying, and of, as I said, some of the benefits we can achieve in terms of economies of scale and discounting. But so this is a form of advocacy on which we're not relenting. or giving up, and the growth, as indicated in our original presentation, has already been remarkable in recent financial years, and we do want to build on that. If I may just take advantage of the fact that the Honourable Mr. Becker raised the issue of advertising, I just wanted to say that, that as the Honourable Member spoke about Checkers and Pick and Pay assisting local media and possibly other large-scale businesses, I think that the one issue we should be aware of is that the economic sustainability of community media really forms part of the broader picture of economic sustainability and prosperity across the country and in all communities and down to the district level. So I think it is important that as we embark on economic reconstruction and recovery as South Africans in the public sector, in the private sector, etc., I think we should look forward to the day, and it should remain an objective of all of us, that we will see such levels of economic activity in all areas of the country that that we will achieve sustainability for community media in the same way that we will achieve and should sustain and should achieve sustainability for commercial media. Commercial media themselves are going through a very rough time at the moment. We've lost dozens of print titles. We've seen, I think there have been 700 journalist retrenchments in the mainstream commercial media sector during this lockdown. And so there are equally severe constraints and pressure on that sector. And so when so our outlook on sustaining community media is to ensure that we sustain all media in the country supported fundamentally by economic growth. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, that's from Jisa, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, MDDA. To complete your side.
Yes, thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. The MDDA will proceed as follows. I'm going to ask the Executive Manager for Protest to deal with the initial findings and consultation around the multi-choice audio bouquet and inclusion of the community media. Honourable Member, just to assure you that we've got no appetite, no interest to be captured by anyone in the state. So we will work with this as sensitive as it is possible, and we know it's a sensitive matter, and that I think in finalizing it, we will bring on board all the necessary partners and stakeholders, including the Minister, is agreed to be with us when we finalize this deal. But I'm going to ask Nzu to talk to that because we have started consulting the sector. Cheryl, with the Executive for Strategy, M&E and Research, will talk to the planned training for the coming elections. The CFO will address the national treasury issue, our request for additional funding, and the state of our current budget. And I will take the other questions and comments. Thank you, colleagues. Go for it, Amzu. Unmute yourself, Amzu.
Yes, I shall. Thank you very much, you. The chairperson, honourable members, and the deputy minister, good morning. Just on the issue of multi-choice, I think for us it was, as MDDA, we felt that it was important to try and expand access to community radio sector, and that's doing by engaging various partners, and one of them being multi-choice. So in our initial discussion with multi-choice has sort of offered to include all community radio stations in their bouquet. This, of course, will then result in the community radio expansion. But I think what we are currently doing now is just to go to finer details in terms of what does it mean to the actual community radio station, what are the benefits they're going to derive from that, and of course, what are the obligations and legal obligations in terms of will this service be free,
or will this service at a later stage be, you know, be require them to pay? And I think this is then something that we want to further engage with MultiChoice so that it becomes a win-win a solution for both parties. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you,
Mr.
Sharon.
Thank you, CEO, and good morning to Chairperson, Honourable Members, and the Deputy Minister. In terms of the election reporting, as one of the Honourable Members mentioned, the recent experience in the United States has highlighted the importance of the media in terms of fair and unfair reporting on elections and political parties. As a result, a couple of years ago, we held a relatively successful election reporting training for the upcoming national elections, training a number of community media across the country on the press code, on fair reporting elections, on fake news, etc. And we are planning to do this again in quarter four of our financial year, which is January to March of next year, for the upcoming municipal elections. This will be extensive training. It will be done in partnership with other bodies, and it will cover a wide range of aspects essential to the community media covering elections and active citizenry, from, as I said, from providing fair coverage through to avoidance of fake and identifying fake news, and even security measures for media, and we will be going to the provinces where we will be conducting the training to ensure that we can actually get as many community media to participate.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Good morning, Chair, members, and Deputy Minister. I think with regard to the budget, it's important to note that during the current financial year, National Treasury has cut the whole budget just under 1% in this current financial year. And over the next two financial years, the budgets have been cut by 4.75% and 8.5% from the fiscus. And also with regard to our budget in terms of split, a majority of our funding actually comes from our funders, from the USAF levies. And the impact of the COVID is unknown as to what is the impact going to be on that funding going forward into the next financial year and years to come. As we know, it has impacted all parts of the economy. With regard to just the banking sector alone, the interest earned is down by half in terms of repo rates, etc. So it has a huge impact. So at this stage, with regard to any additional funding or funding to be utilized, it's going to be very difficult. We try to manage the budget as efficiently as possible and give back as much as possible. But we are also anticipating that the budget is going to be reduced from this year and going into the next financial year. So other than the fact from the fiscus, but also from the rate we collect on the levy side. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CEO.
Thank you, CFO. Thank you, colleagues. Just to add to or answer the other question, to say to honourable members, especially I think honourable Park who raised the issue about us negotiating also with the SABC about the availability of that platform to the community broadcasters. We learned about that last night, and we immediately engaged with the GCO of SABC. Even this morning we were in discussions, and we will take that matter forward, honourable member. Honourable Van Damme, yes, when you talk about grants being applied for online, with this a call for application, there's three methods in which we are asking the beneficiaries or potential grantees to apply. The first one is an online, so we have launched an online application system. And people, because we're still phasing it in, people will be allowed, or projects will be allowed to still use the older methods as well, including delivering or dropping off at our offices, and also downloading the application form and emailing it to the given email address at the MDPA. Fund digital print, yes, we are funding, and it is not, the two honorable members, both Van Damme and Mackenzie, are talking about us having to step up in terms of digitization of the sector. There is a of projects, especially in the print, that are funded in terms of the digital or the online ones. And Honorable Van Damme has asked for names. The first time it prints physically and online. Free State is online. It's Kapa Limpopo. It both prints and it's also online. Izindaba in the Western Cape last published online in 2017. It is the current beneficiary. Ukubo Yabantu Abanqinci last published online in 2016. Lukunodu is printing online as well. They're publishing online as well. Zindabela, I think it's in the Limpopo, which also prints in online, Ezabazu as well. So we've got a couple. As I'm saying, we did a quick audit on who prints and publishes online and broadcasts online. I think in the broadcast side, we had 24 that actually were on social media or were online as well. Just to also add on the request for the multi-choice bouquet, there were a couple of community radio stations that were approaching us one by one, asking for that service, and so we went and we thought that we should not do it in piecemeal as the MDDA, and we asked for it to be opened up, obviously within the comfort of the sector and all parties involved, as Mzu is said. But we're saying for those that wanted our assistance in doing so, we are assisting them, but obviously those negotiations will continue. Honorable Mackenzie, in terms of the Act, yes, it does say historically diminished indigenous languages and cultural groups, and so it is provided for in the Act. Sustainability of the media sector, I think that's Honorable Mlala. Honorable Mlala, that topic is very close to this executive's heart. In fact, I'm not sure if I had not come to Parliament or to the Portfolio Committee previously to say that as a result of and following all the other conferences and summits and colloquiums and community media engagements, where we then established and ascertained what challenges they were going through and are currently going through, we then decided we should consult on the 13th and 14th of August. We held a two-day consultative conference on sustainability of the sector, which we were trying to come up with terms of reference for sustainability research that we achieved through that conference, and the terms of research will be published now. The key areas we're looking at in terms of the sustainability of the sector is the revenue generation. Obviously, the 30% set aside, it can be made a law or policy or a directive that can be implemented throughout government. It will assist the sector it will assist greatly. We would like to consolidate government support. We're not of the view that the money that is appropriated to us through GCIS is all we can access from government. We are beginning to ask ourselves, what can a small business do? What can ITC do? What can the NYCA do? We are in discussions with the national lotteries and so forth. So ours is to really open the doors, because our mandate says we must create a conducive environment for community media development and diversity. Another area we're looking at in terms of sustainability is audience measurement. We're sitting currently in committees with the BRC, which is the Broadcast Research Council, which is overhauling its research method and process, and MDDA is there to look after the community media. So again, we're going to look at options on how we move forward with that, but it does have an impact. The inaccurate or unreliable audience numbers do have a negative impact on who invests in the community media and when. Digital and innovation is something that we will finalize the digital migration strategy before the end of the year, not even financial year, before the end of the year. So we are saying as the MDA that the sustainability is key, and one of the issues obviously is the Centex issue. So it's called high operational cost, because it's Centex, it's SARS, it's Capasso, it's SAMRO. We have met with SAMRO, meeting with SAMRO, just to discuss the mechanism on how we can work together and how we can alleviate some of these challenges by the sector. So the CFO has spoken to the National Treasury. There's an issue of one district, one community radio station. There's hardly any district with one community radio station, honorable members. We could have slides that show, in fact, that if we can make an example with about Cape Recon in Limpopo, it's currently sits with 13 or more community radio stations. Bembe is 9 or more community radio stations. I think Tshwane is 21 or 26. So there's actually more than there is less. And naturally, that is, I think that is driven by the number of licensing from ICASA. SENTEC, where can we make changes? In terms of SENTEC, I think it is important for the honorable members to understand also the history of the steps, for the history of supporting signal distribution that back in the day and until 2012, that there was about 20 million, I think if I'm correct, I think if Mpumpo, no, Dr. Muluka would correct me. There was about 20 million that was appropriated, that used to be appropriated directly by the National Treasury to the old DOC for signal distribution, and that's why we hardly had challenges then. But that we lost in 2012, and so from 2012 we can see that the debt has been skyrocketing. And so our aim and our strategy now has been that, as I've said, we will now continue to at least pay the setup cost. If I can make an example, we connected 3 radio stations this year. One of them was 788. One was about 688. Another one, 588. Those are huge amounts for a station that is a startup. So for startup, we will be paying. And so we now have written to ask for an arrangement on how we can then offset this debt. And we are hoping, because it's a moving target, that we can sort it out as soon as possible. And I must hasten to mention, honorable members, that we will do within the constraints of the finances that we have. We don't have that line item budget. We also have got a mandate from the minister to expand the community achieve the television footprint. So this will be competing tasks that I think we've got in the next 3 years that we'd like to actually deal with them. I hope that I've answered most of the questions, if not all. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, MDDA. We'll now give to SENTEC, followed by ICASA. Just make sure that if you don't have network challenges, it does help to keep your video camera on as you take the platform. This is important for those that are following the discussions from different platforms, as well as for just the content, because others are using this to also help with content. Thank you. But I'm just saying it may have been an omission for some, but others may be having connection problem. But if you don't have, we already plead that. Keep the video camera on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members and the Deputy Minister. I think it's a few questions. Thanks for the comments on what we've presented. Just a few responses. I think the broadcast value chain really it encompasses, I think, about 4 aspects. The founder of the broadcast station, which in this case is the community media, or the community broadcast non-profit entities which are established, and that community broadcasting entity then has to develop the content, and they have to spend money on development of the content. That content has to be distributed, so they have to establish budgets for distribution of the content that then gets received by the audiences. And those audiences, the numbers of audiences then would trigger an interest from broadcasters from advertisers who would then want to advertise in that radio station, and thus generating income or advertising revenue for the radio station. There is a threshold, of course, above which the broadcaster then gets interested in advertising, which is for a certain number of audiences that are listening to your radio station. So the signal distribution is really in the value chain. My colleagues, the CFO, Rosanne Raskinya, and Devu Polishop, they will assist me on the two issues or two questions that have been raised. One is, are we really delivering value for money for our broadcasters, and what is it that we are doing a syntax that is maybe causing difficulties, and how have we dealt with that as syntax? CFO will deal with the, or COO will deal with the issues around the streaming capacity and what can be done from a technological evolution point of view. What do we do as syntax, and how do we see the signal to be charged, facilitating the migration to digital by the community broadcasting industry. And I do think, Shepherdson, I must mention it here, I think in this house we have got the founding fathers of community media, or founding parents, let me say, one of them, which is Mr. Lungo Mtimde, who at the time when this Spectre was founded, they were really promoting access. And I think we all as a country bought into the access to community media. And I'm sure that they will, wherever they are playing their roles in the public sector, they will assist and ensure that this sector does not die, because I think they are very much interested in the prospects of success of community media, like all of us are. May I just ask at this stage then the CFO just to deal with issues of value and fees that we charge briefly, and the COO will speak to the issues around digital migration as it relates to radio. Thank you, CFO.
Thank you, Mlamli. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Committee Members, Deputy Minister from the Presidency, DG. Yes, I'll be talking to the issue of digital migration related to community broadcasting. Chair, Committee Members, we are underway to transform the center capabilities to enable digital migration for the community media and other broadcasters that we provide services for. In terms of television, you're very much aware of the digital migration process. Community broadcasters are allocated capacity in the very first multiplex of the digital migration with the SABC. So as and when we switch off analog services in each of the provinces, we will then be migrating the community television services to digital as well. In terms of the radio services, we are deploying online streaming. We have our own capabilities offered to broadcasters to actually digitize their services. As we all understand, countries are migrating to mobile services on radio streaming. That capability is here and has been made available to broadcasters. The future that we see beyond analog switch off will be that of digital audio broadcasting and digital streaming on the radio side of things. To the digital audio broadcasting, we have established trials in the Gauteng province, and we are expanding to the KZN province and the Western Cape province. This intending to enable the broadcasters and community broadcasters to ready themselves for the digital era. We believe this will take off in 2 to 5 years' time, and we will be migrating also the analog radio to digital radio there. The process will yield multiple benefits, the spectrum efficiency that we always talk about, that will use lesser spectrum and enable other needing areas of broadband connectivity to access spectrum. There is a cost benefit with future technology as well, so there is a benefit to be realized, and multitudes of quality of content and services availability associated with that. But also in terms of future sustainability of community media, we propose to the MDDA and the customers themselves a future operating model where we say there should be ownership of the assets by community broadcasters. broadcasters to lessen the monthly recurring cost of broadcasting that liability on them with the model that we are proposing. And there is a buy-in from the MDDA. They working on that with us. So we are hopeful that going into the next financial year, we will start the implementation of that model. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
I think the issue of value for money, one out of the shared members, we believe that Centec, with the services that we provide value for money for our broadcast clients, and we believe that we are actually executing that in a responsible way. And we also believe that giving discounts to the value of plus minus 25% of normal value is a responsible attempt from Centec to ensure that there is sustainability of the public, or rather of the community broadcasting sector. We are working together with the MDDA to ensure that in areas where they need to do self-provisioning, but they need technical support from design to execution, Centec is certainly prepared to and is available always to support the distribution of content at good prices to the broadcasters. And I think maybe I can ask my executive of finance to just add something that I may have missed in terms of the value for money, maybe.
Thank you, Mlamli. Just to add to what Mlamli has just said, that within Centec, we look at the best way of using the resources that we have. When it comes to the capital investment, we look at the combination of the cost of the goods that we are going to buy, the quality, to ensure that there's sustainability as we go forward. We use a very strict, when we're purchasing the capital investment and any other goods and services, which is the input cost into deriving the tariffs that we charge to customers. At the procurement stage, we use the supply chain tender processes through which we sift through the best cost and the best quality to ensure sustainability of the organization. And all our capital investment is directed, it's on demand. We are in responding to strategic initiatives or in response to service delivery that will be required specifically for specific customers. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson. Lastly, if I may, Honourable Chair, say that our view is that we do need, as a sector, to have maybe a national discussion on how we deal with sustainability of community broadcasters, so that we can address issues of governance, issues of how we run community broadcasters as a business, and how also it can be restructured moving forward. So those are the approaches that I think the MDDA, in the consultation processes, together with Centec and ICASA, we are engaging with communities to see how we can best assist them where we can. I think, Chair, we have covered most of the questions. I trust that we are... we've answered every question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, MTDA. Thank you, Centec. Now we are on ICASA.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think I will hand over to the CEO to deal with specifics, but I think at the high level, it's important, Honorable Members, to note that the aspirations of one district, one station, and so forth are quite pronounced. And for those to be achieved, we need nothing less than a legislative amendment. Because when you look at Section 16 and 17 of the ECA, I think it points us at a direction
which cannot accommodate the one district, one municipality model, at least in the way that has been articulated by honorable members. I think it's important. And secondly, Centec is raising critical points around the sustainability, that on the one end, they are not able to collect the signal distribution fees, and on the other end, the authorities seem to be licensing at a large scale. The objective reality, honorable members, is that for the past 3 years or so, we even had a moratorium on the licensing of community broadcasters for sound. There was a public outcry. There was a public outcry at various levels of our reporting, including, you know, at the level of the portfolio committee in the previous administration, that we cannot do that. You know, we need to make sure that we license community broadcasters are constrained. Even those who did not comply with the 6 months notice of the expiry of their licenses, even though they had been reminded. So I'm just trying to illustrate, you know, honorable members, the difficulty that ICASA finds itself in. That on the one hand, well, at that time the moratorium was occasioned by issues of frequency coordination and the shortages thereof, which we had then resolved. Now we have about 130, you know, expression of interest, I will put it that way, which we had reported on this morning, which is a, you know, a good number, a large number. But on the other end, we do acknowledge that this very 130, not that we will license all of them, it may very well place a burden on the side of Centec, but also on our side, because we have a regulatory mandate to fulfill. And we have to fulfill it in line with applicable legislation as matters stand. So I'm just trying to show you know, the difficulty that we then find ourselves in. And as matters stand, we may just have to proceed informed by the prevailing legislation. But I would like to hand over to the CEO through you, Honorable Malini.
So that he deals with a few other issues. Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chair. And greetings to you, Honorable Chairperson, CM, Honorable Members of the Committee, and the different delegations and colleagues in the meeting. I think, Chair, just to let you on to what the Chairperson has said around the constraint from a legislative perspective, and maybe just highlight the key intervention we have implemented from a regulatory perspective. So we appreciate the current legislative provision, and we appreciate that obviously it is not our space to change the law. So we have to work with the law as it stands. So one of the rationale for implementation or the imposition of the moratorium was such that we can take the time to review the regulations. So because we cannot change the law, we then change the regulations. And we change the regulation primarily to introduce a two-phased approach to licensing of community broadcasters. And the two-phase entails, as presented by the chair, phase one, where we said we will do a pre-registration process, and phase two, which would then be the detailed assessment subject to the 30 days that the Act provides for. And through the pre-registration phase, Chair, it was where we had intended to make sure that we eliminate applicants that would not necessarily be viable, if I was to use that wage. And in essence, what we have implemented through this new regulation is really a competitive process. And when I say competitive process, Chair, I mean we have implemented some stringent requirements around commercial viability. So the people that apply have to demonstrate that the commercial broadcasting, or rather the community broadcasting services that they seek to launch, will be sustainable and they will be viable. They've got a viable business case for the communities that they seek to target. In instances where that viability will not be demonstrated, I think it is to be expected that the authority will then exercise its discretion not to license. However, Chair, that we have to appreciate that this will then only solve the problem going forward. It will not deal with the issue of the legacy licenses that were issued prior to this new regulatory regime. And that perhaps is something that we would need to address differently. So with this current licensing process, Chair, I think we can accept that from the current regulations and the requirements that we have put in place, there will not be, one hopes that there will not be any license that will be issued on the back of a very weak sustainability case. So that's the first point. And again, it draws primarily from the fact that the legislation being what it is, and appreciating that the power to change the law does not lie with us, we then had to implement measures in the regulations that would force us to demand viable business cases from those who seek to enter this space to deal with the problem of viability of new entrants going forward. So I think the other question that was asked that I may need to deal with came from Honorable Kubega around how do we assist the MDDA, especially with regard to avoiding expiry of licenses, i.e. how do we ensure that perhaps we deal with, we support timeous renewal of licenses by communities. Chair, from a compliance perspective, our compliance officers proactively engage with licensees, and we proactively send reminders to most of these licensees. I would even say, Chair, to pretty much all of them, a couple of months prior to the 6 months date, to remind them that they need to send their renewal applications. Again, given some of the issues that have been flagged in this discussion around governance and perhaps the erratic changes in the management of the stations, not all of them respond timely to those reminders. But there are efforts that we continuously proactively take to remind them. And I think secondly, to that issue, Chair, we are continuously engaging with the MDDA as and when required, as and when they seek information about the validity or the compliance status of any of the licensees that they are engaging with, that information is provided. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. That takes care of Itafa's response. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. And thank you, Honorable Members, for those questions. You'll agree with me that I tried to give you, I think, space to ask as far as you can, given the time limitations we have, but as well as also to give enough space for you to receive responses from the departments and the entities. I have since received an apology that the Deputy Minister had to leave earlier to attend to a meeting that has already started. So in this regard, she won't be doing the closing response to this meeting. Honorable Members, given the time and the fact that we have engaged qualitatively to our questions and comments, that we move towards summary of this meeting, unless there is a matter that members would feel that making a summary without that matter clarified, it will defeat the purpose of the discussion. Otherwise, in the absence of that, I'll still ask that we wrap up in 5 minutes that's remaining. May I just check if we agree that there's really no question that members believe, if it's not clarified, that it will defeat the purpose of the meeting. am I audible, member?
Yes, perfectly, Chair.
Okay. It's like with network problems, you must check from time to time that the members would be listening. So that is really my proposal, members, in that we just do the summary, but understanding that these are entities that account to the committee, and from time to time we can be able to call them back again to engage with them. I think from my notes it's clear that the committee notes that sustainability of community media continues to be a challenge, mainly with regard to transmission costs and of course the shift in the traditional advertisement to digital, which is an income that a number of these community media platforms have been relying on. But the committee also appreciates the good work done by GCIS, especially during the difficult time of COVID-19, for keeping South Africans informed at all material times, including the collaboration to debunk fake news whenever they were spread. And the committee appreciates the collaboration between the departments and relevant entities, that is the NTDA, CENTEC and the ICASA, in ensuring support to community media in the different roles that they all play, with a view to ensuring not just sustainability, but that plurality of voices is maintained and participatory democracy it's still there. And I think going forward in terms of recommendations to be noted here, is that the departments, in particular GCIS and GCPT, must continue to work together in supporting the efforts of the entities to ensure sustainability of community media. That both the ICASA and MDDA application processes for community media operations, or the new one thereof, must put sustainability beyond state, initial state funding. Of course, without compromising the need to have sustainable support that ensures at least one district, one community media coverage, and of course the plurality of view, that it's not compromised as you look at this sustainability question. I think this chair of ICASA, as you would have raised the point, takes into account the point you've raised, that you work on the basis of the current legislation. But of course you can take advantage that the regulations you've introduced do make it possible that it's not a free-for-all, and that's why you are introducing even a number of years now, which may have not been an issue before. So necessarily it's a balance of ensuring that each district is covered, but of course where there can be more and the sustainability proven beyond reasonable doubt, that beyond just the initial funding that people get, they are able to run this effectively. So I just thought it's important that point is emphasized. That all efforts are made to help pay CENTEC debt and speedy implementation of upfront infrastructure payment as a way of reducing future transmission costs for community media, as presented by both NTDA and CENTEC in terms of the continued discussion that they are having. And that the NTDA community media, the digitalization strategy, be supported by all relevant players to secure the future of community media in the changing technological environment. and that the opportunity presented by the public participation or public comments period on the white paper on the audio visual and audio content services. We used also as a moment presented to reinforce the sustainability of community media. And probably we also need the auditing of impending legislation to for government spend on community media and the national broadcaster to reach the 30% government spend as decided by cabinet at some point, with the view, of course, of proposing reviewal of those sections that defeat the purpose of such decision. For example, it may be in the PFMA, it may be in the MFMA, because also how local government spend is also guided by the financial legislation, which is the MFMA in Senegal. And that's the district development model be used as part of establishing proper ownership and support for community media. And I'm sure it is GIS in its presentation that when they looked at where do we go from here and what are the opportunities that are there, they've also cited the district development model as an opportunity to get community media to be supported in that regard. And that a community education drive be embarked upon by GIS, MDTA, and ICASA to avoid the capture of community media by destructive interests, but also on licensing and funding, as well as the need to debunk fake news in protection of our hard-won democracy. I think the last point really is that would still need the entities to work harder in devising other means of ensuring that we do not wait until the expiry of the license or a report that does not come as it relates to annual reports, that we can have an early warning system put in place to realize that whatever was in the business plan that gave rise to the approval of the application as being sustainable, that you can pick it up early, that necessarily it's not the case. And as I said, it will also, in a way, deal with this change of leadership in the middle of nowhere, forcing people in that if they fight in a community radio station, the best option will not be to resolve problems, but open up an alternative station, because you can put a better motivation for licensing and therefore collapsing the system as a whole of ensuring sustainable community media at district level. So that would be the summary of the meeting, honorable members. Presented to yourselves, and I take it that you agree it captures the essence of the discussions we have had this morning and until now. Agreed?
Thank you, Stolo.
Thank you. Everyone was that? No. So it's silent, Stolo. That's fine.
Yeah.
All right. So I take it that, honorable members, that takes us indeed to the adjournment of the meeting. You just remember, as we agreed as the committee, that we do not have the meeting that was planned for tomorrow. Please take note of that in case you've not updated your diaries. And that next week when we meet, we'll be focusing on the Auditor General's report, and therefore that notice you had on the program has been amended accordingly. The meeting stays adjourned until we meet again, honorable members. Thank you, and thank you to the